Hello and welcome to the Brand My Career podcast. I'm your host, Alex Cutterford, and I'm so glad you're joining me today. My goal is to help you take ownership of your career, find your people through personal branding and networking, and take career-enhancing action. Managing your life and career can be hard. That's why every fortnight I'll be releasing an episode where I interview a diverse range of guests that will help you find clarity and build confidence in your career. Let's get into it.
Welcome back to the Brand My Career podcast. And I'm lucky enough to have Gillian Fox here with me today. And Gillian has had a career ranging across leadership and entrepreneurship. She's an author, keynote speaker, senior executive coach, podcast host, and has been delivering gender diversity programs to some of Australia's leading companies for over 15 years. She's a founder of Gillian Fox Group and Your Brilliant Career. Thank you so much for being on with me today.
It's a pleasure, Alex. It's so nice to be here. What a way to kick off the week, huh?
Exactly. I know. I'm going to have a great week because it's going to have started on a high and it's just going to keep going up.
Love that. Love that.
So I thought just to get us started, would you maybe want to share a bit of an overview of your career and who you are and what you do?
Yeah, sure, Alex. So I started my career in the wonderful world of publishing. My first part of my career was at News Corp, and then I had this desire to move into magazines. So I joined what was at the time the second largest magazine publisher in Australia, and it really filled me up. Like, I loved my corporate career. I was very ambitious. By the time I was 31, I was leading teams of about 140 people and had a lot of responsibilities. I also had a young baby, so it was an incredibly busy time of my career. But I absolutely loved it. But then in my 30s, I was offered this fantastic opportunity, and it just didn't light me up in the way that it should have lit me up. And I had to go away and reflect. And the long and the short of it is I started my own business as a result of that experience. So I started as a leadership consultancy. And then in about 2012, there was this shift in the market that was all about gender diversity and helping more women get into the senior part of that leadership pipeline. And I was invited to do a few programs, and I got hooked. And that became my thing, women's career advancement, helping women progress in their careers, feel great about their careers. And that's what my business is today. So the Your Brilliant Career side is our public programs, Rise, Accelerate. And the other side, the Gillian Fox Group, is all about our corporate work. So going into organizations, delivering programs that helps them with those gender goals, diversity goals, executive coaching for senior people, all that sort of thing. Yeah. And I love it, Alex. I absolutely love it.
Awesome. Stood out to me. So you just said you were leading teams of 140 people. What's the biggest challenge when you start leading a group that size?
Well, it's so funny, you know, because 90% of that population were women. They're completely, do you know what I mean? The different opposite agenda to what I deal with today. And I'm not all for, you know, either way is wrong. Do you know what I mean? It's all about having diversity of thought. But 90% women, it was a little bit like the Devil Wears Prada, Alex. You know, and it truly was. It was quite, you know, political and messy at times, and very glamorous as well. You know, we'd go to Paris for Marie Claire, and there were always events. So it was probably about two events every night. But I had 12 direct reports, which is an obscene amount. I think, you know, six is a good number for most people to have. But I had 12 direct reports. I had a good team. When you're managing such a broad portfolio of businesses, so each magazine had its own P&L, and we acquired more magazines, like we acquired Better Homes and Gardens, InStyle, Men's Health, it's a lot of work to be across. And I think the most difficult thing is the different, not only business expectations of those different brands, but also the different personalities, you know, of people that you're managing. And I was pretty young, you know, it was a lot. I think, you know what you know now. And that's probably what makes me so passionate about helping people in their careers today, because I can certainly say hand over heart, looking back at that time, some things I did extremely well and I'm very proud of, and some things I didn't. but I did my best at the time.
Do you have like a lesson that you feel like you took away from that period, like one that any one particular thing that stands out?
So many lessons, Alex, so many lessons. I think the biggest one, and I do see this, and it's probably in other women and people I work with, which is probably why it's forefront for me, is that mistake of landing in a new role or at a new phase of your career and thinking that all the things, all the behaviors that have made you successful to date are going to make you successful in this next leg. And it's that old adage, you know, what got you here won't get you there. And it's so true, but no one tells you. It's like you cross this invisible line where the rules start to shift and you can feel it, like the stakeholders get a little bit more tricky. The landscape feels a little bit more political. You need to be a little bit more multidimensional. And yet you've come from this platform of being this great can-do person, leave it with me, I'll look after it. But now you need to learn how to say no and be very clear on working on the important work. You know, once you're a great tactician, now you need to really demonstrate your strategic acumen. So there's these shifts, you know, and people just expect you to create the shifts, but no one tells you about it. And I think that is one of the biggest lessons that I learned, because I landed in that magazine role with such an appetite to succeed and a fierce work ethic, but it was not easy. And I did not feel like I was succeeding for months and months. And it was because I was applying all the things that made me successful in my previous part of my career. And I was so valued at News Corp. You know, I was on all the leadership programs. They sent me overseas. All these wonderful things happened, which you think validates that all those behaviors are the perfect behaviors. So if I just pick them up and just pop them over here, it'll be fine. But it's not fine. You need to keep evolving, and what got you here won't get you there. So upgrading the skills that are going to keep you valuable and contemporary and relevant in your career is something we need to stay across all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. It was the first time I stepped into a real genuine leadership role. It was, yeah, such an adjustment period, and just I've always felt a lot more comfortable leading up than I am actually in that position of decision making, because then all of a sudden, I've just been doing a thing with some friends. I've sent out a personality quiz that I did, and it came back with my strengths, and I've been asking them to give their feedback on which are my top three of these. Nearly everyone has said ideation as one of them. I'm really coming constantly have ideas, happy to share them, generate ideas, and think, what if we try this, what if we try that? And when I'm doing that up to a leader, I feel really comfortable, and it's like, and then if they say, yep, let's run with it, I'm like, sweet, great. As soon as I was the decision maker, and if I had ideas and I'm like, this is an idea and I have and I want you to go and do it sort of thing, that's where it sort of starts to become a lot trickier for me. So, yeah, it's always such an adjustment stepping into leadership and all those different skills and not over-carrying the burdens of everyone in your team and feeling overly responsible for them and stuff. So it's a wild journey.
It is a wild journey, but, you know, experience counts for a lot. And I think, you know, when people first step into their very first leadership role, they get there because they're good as an expert. And it's such a natural tendency to want to hang on to that expertise. So if your expertise is ideation, like you are the ideas person and you come in, like you kind of, there's part of you that wants to retain that in such a big way because it's what makes you feel good. It's what you're good at. But then there's also this expectation that now you need to get results through others. Now those ideas need to form through the team. They need to be executed by the team. So it is this shift that is going to make you relevant and contemporary or not. Yeah. And it's
absolutely hard. So the areas I really wanted to dive into with you today are around personal branding and self-advocacy. So I guess, why does cultivating a personal brand, why does that matter?
Yeah, I think it matters a lot. And I know personal branding gets a lot of airtime and it can just seem a little, I don't know, unnecessary, woo-woo, whatever. You know, Jeff Bezos famously said, your brand is what other people say about you when you're not in the room. And it's kind of true, right? Like we all have a reputation. And I think the interesting thing about reputation is when it comes to our careers and our reputation at work, it's not the result of doing a dazzling presentation or shining brightly in a particular moment at work. Your reputation is the culmination of all your behaviors, like everything from the way you perform in a meeting to the way you shoot the breeze with someone in the kitchen to the way you behave in a really boring Teams meeting. Like all of those day-to-day behaviors shape how people see you, what you're known for professionally. And, you know, that reputation is either going to support your future success or not. Yeah. But the point is, we all have one. And you know, from your own experience, Alex, we also have perceptions of other people and their reputations, and we may not talk about it. There was a strange noise. We all know about everyone's reputation, and we're probably too polite to talk about it. But it's kind of like we know the person who carries drama for too long in the office. Like, we know the person who doesn't find their personality until midday or at all.
Yeah.
You know, we know the person who says they're so busy all the time, like they're the only ones with a lot on their plate. Like, we know all of those things, and that is their reputation. But the thing is, when it comes to cultivating a personal brand that's going to support you, you need to be really intentional about that. You know, what do you want to be known for? If you're a great team player, for example, someone who has that reputation for getting things done, good attention to detail, but now you want that leadership role, you're going to need to evolve how others see you. You know, because that leadership, it demands strategic thinking, vision, and you're going to have to showcase those qualities. So you need to make that shift from being this doer to this leader. And that is this very intentional piece of curating a personal brand. And that's why it's important, because when that job comes up, you know, you want to make sure that what you're known for, it's actually going to pack a punch and it's going to be aligned with your future ambitions and aspirations.
Yeah. It can sound like such an unnatural thing, like building a personal brand when you put in that language. But when you actually just think about it, in a very real sense of things you can do. Like, that makes so much sense around, like, I will say for me, I came from a carpentry background and cabinet making, and then I was moving into youth work, and I had to demonstrate why am I going to be able to operate in this youth working, and very much could have been viewed as, oh, like, that's a tradie, he's not meant to be in this space. Or when I went from being a youth worker to wanting to move into leadership and needing to bridge that gap between someone's understanding of me, because they viewed me as a person of, oh, like, yeah, Alex is good with young people, but is he going to be able to lead a team? And people are, that's fair, and that's a fair enough question, and it's a fair enough assumption to say Alex has the skill sets to help young people but not colleagues or people that are currently his equals. And so then you need to find a way to communicate to them, no, I can do this, and you need to take an active role in helping them now see what you can see within yourself, that what you can do and the skills that you have and how they apply to this new context.
Was that your experience, Alex? Were people challenged by seeing you in those next roles that you wanted?
Yeah, well, I had one interview. I was in a role, and then I was going for an internal promotion. And I could tell in that interview that the assumptions were being made that, well, like, you know, you're good with young people, but are you actually going to have the hard conversations and these sorts of things? And I could tell that that assumption was there. And even, like, and I was getting the, when I wasn't successful, it was sort of like the, you know, life experience line. And I was thinking, and at that stage I was 30, and I was thinking, at what point am I going to stop getting the, oh, I've had more life experience line? I was like, am I going to be getting this through to my late 30s? But then I think just over time, and then I kept putting myself out there, and then I went for another opportunity came up not long after, and I think ended up being a better fit for me, and I really enjoyed it. I went for it, and yeah, it's just sort of about communicating what you know, not assuming someone's going to know that you think that and know that and feel that sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I think the greatest limitation, though, which didn't hold you up, is actually believing you can make that transition yourself. Because I think most people will create a belief system that because I'm not qualified here, how could I make such a radical career change? But most of the time, the biggest limitation is the way we think about our own capabilities and what's possible, because people make career transitions all the time. And it doesn't mean that it's not going to take a bit of grunt and research and commitment and all of that sort of stuff. But in most cases, so much is possible if we get out of our own way.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was the mindset shift that preluded those opportunities. And I talk a lot around, it's the growth mindset that prepares you for those opportunities and has you ready to advocate for yourself and things like that. My wife was laughing at me on the weekend because we're talking about something, and I was like, maybe I'll do a PhD in that and stuff. And I just leaned to the side of optimism. And she was just like laughing at me going, she's like, you just think so differently to me, because I haven't even done a bachelor's degree. So, and I'm like, yeah, but I can evidence this and I can do a bridging course here, and then I would be able to evidence enough to justify being able to do a research area in this stuff. And she's done her bachelor's degree and she can't bear the thought of even doing another bachelor's degree.
Well,
the optimism mindset, and it came up, it was in a video of Dr. Carl. He's recently written a book about his career, and the advice he gave in this little clip he was doing was just around there. It's scientifically proven that someone with an optimistic outlook is going to have better life results, really. So mindset is absolutely key. How can personal branding help attract the right people to us, to help us in our career?
You know, attracting the right people, I think, it's such a strategic and important component of a successful career. Like, you think about life, having the right people around you in life counts for a lot, doesn't it? You talk about your wife a lot. You know what I mean? Like, there's having good people around you, generally speaking, is a good thing. And it's actually no different in your career. And you need to be more thoughtful about that. Because I think what happens is we gravitate to people that we have a natural connection with, and that's good. It's very natural. But it can also be problematic because it keeps important people potentially away from us as well. So building the right network in business is something that I encourage all the women that work with us to get laser-like focused about, because you need to have career enablers and the right people around you to help you in your career. And I think that the roles that get the most visibility when you talk about, well, who are these key people that you need? You hear about mentors a lot. Have you got a mentor, Alex?
In a very loose sense, there's someone that I have connected with well, and I said, you know, like, are you happy to be mentoring me? And we don't necessarily do like a really formal thing, but we're just aware of each other's work, and he'll often give me advice or tips or pushback or challenge an idea that I'm thinking through on how it could be thought through better.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what mentors are great at, right? They will give you guidance. They might share their experience. They might help you think differently about a challenge that you're facing. They tend to be someone that you can trust to give you that advice and perspective. And that is incredibly valuable. And I just find, particularly in the area of women's career advancement, there's a lot of mentoring programs and all that sort of stuff. But where we put the spotlight in a lot of the programs we deliver is the sponsor. And sponsorship doesn't get nearly as much attention as mentoring, but it can be a real game changer for career advancement. So what's the difference between a mentor and a sponsor? Well, a sponsor tends to be someone senior in the business. They see your potential. They will actively advocate for you. They might also open the doors in the decision-making room. They might remove some roadblocks. They might speak up for you when you're not in the room. So a whole lot of things, a little bit risky for them. Yeah, because if they advocate for you and you don't deliver, that's not good for their reputation, their personal brand.
Yeah.
Mentors, on the other hand, are great for helping you build skills, confidence. But the sponsors are the one who can accelerate your progress. I like to say mentors will skill you up, which is great, but mentors will help move you up. I first came across this idea of sponsorship quite a while ago now, but I certainly wasn't aware of it while I was navigating my publishing career. And I stumbled across it when I was reading Harvard Business Review, and there was this article called Why Men Still Get More Promotions. And the author of this article was three fantastic scholars. Two of them I knew quite well and really respected their work. They'd done this extensive study on high performers, men and women. And basically, they found that women, even when they were really working hard and achieving great things, were not progressing at the same rate as men. And one of the reasons was sponsorship. And what the study revealed is that men were really good at surrounding themselves with senior people who could advocate for them and create opportunities, while women often assumed that hard work alone was going to be good enough. But I'm here to tell you, hard work alone is not good enough. Like, relationships, they really do matter. And regardless of if you're a male or female, a sponsor can have a huge impact on your career. And in fact, there's a great book called The Sponsor Effect by a woman called Sylvia Ann Hewlett. And she's done some incredible work around sponsorship. And her research reveals that having a sponsor can increase your chances of career success by 30%. Now, that's a big deal. It doesn't even matter if you're a male or female. That is a big deal. But the research also reveals that men have twice as many sponsors as women, and women have three times as many mentors as men. So there's a real inconsistency there. And if sponsorship is going to build the leadership pipeline for women, we need to take sponsorship more seriously from that perspective. But for anyone who values their career, they should be attracting sponsors. So, you know, my advice to people is, you know, think about who are the people you need in your corner to help you grow in your career, and what steps can you take to start building those relationships and adding value to them, because it's going to make a huge difference.
Yeah. Well, I don't think I've ever even heard of it turned that way around, having a sponsor alongside, like, you have mentors, coaches, and sponsors. But I've already, and here I am, a man. I've already identified three people that I was thinking of them as people that could endorse me. And so I've naturally gone to that place of, oh, I need to find three people above me that could sort of vouch for me, I guess, for getting my next promotion. And so, yeah, that's really interesting. And that's three people I thought of. I haven't asked three people to be my mentor.
Yeah, but the interesting thing with that, I'm just going to touch on this because this is a really important point. Like, Alex, I could ask you to be my mentor and you could say yes or no. I can't ask you to be my sponsor. I have to prove it to you. I have to prove my value to you for you to stick your neck out, take a risk, and say, yes, Gillian would be great for that role. You could ask a specific question. I am going for this particular promotion. Would you endorse me? That is different. That is a different conversation than saying, would you be my sponsor? Because would you be my sponsor is like, would you just, you know, open every door for me, look out for me, always stick up for me? Mm. Like, it's too much. And I remember doing an interview, would have been about 18 months ago now. It was with American panel. I was on the panel, and one of the other people on the panel, it was about sponsorship, was very senior, wonderful HR specialist. And he introduced this story that one day someone came into his office and said, would you sponsor me? And his first thought was, no. Like, I don't rate you enough to be able to sponsor you. I don't know your full capability to even sponsor you. And because he was such a lovely man, he handled the situation very graciously, and he basically mentored her. Yeah, he didn't sponsor her. And that is the risk that you take. So, you know, to get someone to really advocate for you, you need to be able to understand how to demonstrate your value and how to add value to them from a business perspective.
One of the micro strategies that I've used for starting to, I guess, to edge into that space, particularly if it's you're wanting someone that's not just like your direct boss, that isn't necessarily going to naturally be aware of what you do, was I got really intentional about actually asking questions on meetings that are larger than just my team. Because so often you join these meetings and as soon as there's like more than 10, I don't know what the magic number is, but once you go over a certain number, no one wants to talk or say anything. And it's just like someone puts a whole heap of time into giving a presentation. They're like, any questions? And no one asks anything. And so I really push myself to try and whenever there's a presentation being given to a group bigger than my own team, I really push myself to engage with it and think, what's a follow-up question I can ask here to sort of just, I guess, add more value to that conversation, and what the answer that they give will benefit everyone and stuff. And so I really pushed myself to do that. And it's actually helped me to then become known in those other teams because it might spark a conversation that someone else connects with. And it just actually naturally, and particularly if no one else is asking a question, everyone remembers that one person asked the question. And if you make it a good, thoughtful question, it's the same as a job interview, really. When you ask good questions, people connect with that and resonate. And yeah, that's been one little way of I've tried to build those connections with people in other teams and leaders in other teams and stuff.
You can't underestimate the power of a good question. That's great. Yeah, plus,
absolutely.
It takes the spotlight off you. You know, it gives you that breathing capacity. It's amazing.
What advice would you give to someone that's, I guess, wanting to show up in the world with more confidence? And, you know, what's going to help them get over the mark to even have the confidence to have those types of conversations with someone about being, even just being a mentor can be a very nervous thing to ask someone, even though you're not actually asking them to stick their neck out on the line. But even, and then again, asking someone, you know, that conversation about becoming a sponsor and really sticking their neck out for you, how does someone build the confidence up to ask those questions?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I think, what is the worst case scenario, Alex?
Hmm.
Now, there's a lot of things, you know, when it comes to women's career advancement, you know, about speaking up. Speak up. Women need to speak up more. And that's true. Like, I think speaking up, and as per your example of in the meeting, is very important. But really what matters even more is what you say. Like, you want to do it elegantly. You want to be compelling in your business. You don't want to just speak up for speaking up's sake. And if you go to a mentor and you have a well-structured conversation that says, you know, I would like to ask you if you'd be open to mentoring me. This is what it might look like in terms of engaging in a conversation on this frequency. These are the reasons that, you know, I really respect you and I feel like we could talk about X, Y, and Z. Like, being really clear and sophisticated in your ask, even if they say no. Like, even if they say no, I haven't got the time, or I'm mentoring other people at the moment, or it's just not my thing, you will still have left a good impression. So it's not failure by any means. So I think it's very important. But let me talk about confidence first of all, and then let me come back to making the ask, because I think the two are intrinsically linked. Because you initially asked me, Alex, like, what advice would you give for someone who wanted to turn up in the world with more confidence? Yeah. That's a big question all by itself. Yeah. And I would say, and you touched on this earlier, actually, Alex, is understand your strengths and learn how to articulate them. Be very intentional with your thinking and make a habit of tracking your wins. Now, let me talk about those things. So you talked about your strengths. You said you went and interviewed some friends and which ones ranked top and ideology came top. So you've done a little bit of, you know, background work to really understand what you're known for and how people see you and what those key strengths are. And there's a lot there, so much value for you. But a lot of people don't take the time to do that. You know, what do you do better than anyone else? Like, what makes you unique? And then being able to communicate your strengths is so important to confidence. And you can ask someone that you trust at work what they think you excel at, or you can reflect on moments where you've really shone. You can narrow it down like you did to two or three that make you stand out, and then go craft the narrative around it. Like, you never know in business, and I know it sounds a bit out there, but I promise you, you never know, because they're the most unexpected conversations when someone's going to say to you, what do you bring to the table that others don't? And that is when you want to pull out of your toolkit, well, actually, it's interesting, you should ask this. This is what I've been told. These are my three strengths, and this is how I think they, you know, contribute to the future success of this business. Yeah. So I think that's one thing, taking the time to really understand what your strengths are and how you articulate that. And it's not only good from an external point of view, saying the right things in business and making your value visible, but it's also good for your head. Like, you know, this is me. This is who I'm good at. This is my narrative around what I bring to the table. Like, I think there's a lot of power in that. So that is the first thing. The second thing is about being intentional with your thinking. Because as humans, the little complex beasts that we are, you know, we naturally lean to being negative. Like, around 80% of our thoughts tend to be negative, and we regurgitate 95% of our thoughts from the day before. So we're very geared to be a particular way. So we have to think about the way that we think if we want to be intentional. Otherwise, we're just on this autopilot and it is so easy to spiral. You know, you have one small challenge and it snowballs into hours of overthinking, and before you know it, your inner critic has just taken a good grasp and you're feeling quite overwhelmed. So we really want to bring awareness to our thoughts, even if you have to write it down. Like, you know, if you're sitting in a meeting and someone gives you a sideways glance you don't like and you feel this anxiety, like write down what is the belief that's driving that. That they don't respect you, that they don't think the work has been as good as they think it to be. And then have a look, is there real data and evidence to support that? Not make up stuff. Like, what is the real evidence to support that? And I think the other thing about being intentional is the way we talk to ourselves internally. If you wouldn't speak to someone else so harshly, why do it to yourself? Like, be kind. Remind yourself of the progress you're making. Which brings me to my final point, and this one is around invest in your wins. Like, I know as high performers, and I'm sure your listeners, you attract a lot of high performers because you wouldn't listen to a career podcast unless you didn't have an appetite for your career and wanting to do well, that there's this tendency to, you know, move on. What's the next goal? What have I got to get my teeth into now? How do I prove that? But there is so much power in capturing your wins. And I think it's just such a simple and effective tool to help you not only recognize your value, but learn to capture and record what those achievements are from a business point of view. Because when you go to your performance review, or if someone says, how have things been for you in the last quarter, you actually have something really intelligent to contribute rather than just saying, yeah, I've been so busy.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is boring, right? So boring. You want to be memorable. You don't want to be boring. But the thing, the challenge with that, if you don't bring a disciplined effort to it, is you don't remember what you achieved. Alex, I can't even remember what I did last week.
Yeah.
You know, so if you said, Ghislaine, what are your highlights from, you know, April this year? I'm like, I don't even know what happened in April this year.
Yeah.
So with that in mind, one of the tools that we use in our Rise Accelerate program is this thing called the Ta-Da Guide. And it's this idea of capturing your ta-da moments. Yeah. And creating a discipline around just capture those things in business where you're contributing. So you have this beautiful list of ta-da moments that not only remind you of the incredible momentum and work that you're doing in your career right now that feels so good, but also things that you can lift out and use as drops of influence in your conversations, as well as evidence of your work. So I think, you know, when you've got those sort of things happening, confidence is so much more accessible, because confidence isn't about being perfect. It's not about doubting you. It's not that you're never going to avoid doubting yourself, but it is about knowing your worth. It is about being mindful of how you think and treat yourself. It is about recognizing the progress you're making. And I think when you do all of those things, having conversations with people, you feel like you have a seat at the table. Do you know what I mean? And that you can step into that space and have those conversations and make those asks with people with a lot more ease.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of really powerful advice in all of that. And this has sort of bled into talking about this piece around self-advocacy. And you mentioned there, like, often people just get that advice of, you know, just speak up, but you need that substance to it to really be able to do that effectively and powerfully and confidently, and that you need to be prepared and all of that stuff. And I've definitely, in my experience of self-advocacy in the workplace, went ahead and it very much, I grew in confidence, and then naturally from that flowed the ability to self-advocate for myself. And it definitely wasn't, self-advocacy definitely isn't a natural state for me to be in, like advocating for myself, speaking well of myself, all that sort of stuff. But when I have, it's been a positive experience on the most part. And so I've often given people that advice around, you know, self-advocate for yourself. It's so important and so powerful for your career. One of the moments I had, and I guess not so much a ta-da moment, but a aha moment, was when I was sort of starting to realize through podcasts I was listening to and things, articles I was reading around, how female's experience of that may not actually be the same of mine in a common scenario. How might a female experience self-advocacy in the workplace differently to a male in the general sense?
I think there is that perception that it is very different. I think self-advocacy can feel tricky for women. I mean, you said it felt tricky for you too, but you still did it, right? But I think it can feel very tricky for women because it's not something a lot of people were taught. And like on our programs, we have a lot of women from multicultural backgrounds as well. And, you know, you're so taught to be humble and, you know, not speak up. Even Sheryl Sandberg talks about how women are socially conditioned not to brag, not speak up for themselves. So from an early age, we're not encouraged to do that. We're encouraged to be humble, collaborative, not too assertive. And all those qualities can feel at odds with putting yourself out there at work when you want to self-advocate. I think a lot of women that I work with believe, and the research validates this, they believe that their good work will speak for itself. And I think it's such a common mindset. If I just keep delivering great results, people will notice. And yes, sometimes they do, for sure. But more often than not, it's the people who are vocal about their contributions who get the recognition. You know, competency and confidence, they get a little blurred amongst all of that. And the biggest problem, I think, is no one sits you down early in your career and says, now here's how to advocate for yourself without feeling awkward. You know, here's the three steps. This is what you need to do. And I think also for women, and women will say this when, you know, they're in facilitated discussion groups and things, one of their hesitations to self-advocating comes from seeing it done badly. You know, seeing that person in the office who talks endlessly about their achievements, who gloats, takes the credit, you know, and they hate that. It's like, I don't want to be like that.
Yeah.
That just lacks integrity. I want to be authentic. I don't want to come across as arrogant or pushy. But here is the thing, and this is what I say to people that in the training programs or coaching, self-advocacy doesn't matter if you're a male or female. It doesn't have to mean losing your integrity. It is not about being obnoxious or shouting your wins from the rooftops. It's about finding a way to share your value authentically. And one of the best strategies is to frame your achievements in terms of how they've benefited the business. So you don't have to sit there and say, I did an amazing job on this project, which is going to feel so lacking in authenticity. But you could say, you know, this project came in under budget and ahead of schedule. And as a team, we're feeling great about it. You know what I mean? Like you can bring in some facts that showcase the success of that. And the other point I would probably add here, because I really do want any listeners who are uncomfortable with self-advocacy to know this, that it's a skill and it can be learned. And yes, it might feel a bit uncomfortable at first, but the more you practice, the easier it gets. And it's so worth it because when you can communicate your value effectively, you don't just get noticed, you get opportunities.
Absolutely. And it's all about getting yourself into the right context. And once you get yourself into a context where you feel comfortable and it makes sense to do it, it just seems to flow so much more naturally for me. Like you don't want to be that person walking around the office talking about all the great things you've done. It's like no one wants to be that person. All the person always talking about, oh, my last place, I used to do it this way, I used to do it that way, you know. And it's just like, and everyone just starts to tune it out. But once you know, for me, like you do it into the context of, all right, I've got a performance review coming up. They want me and they are desperately wanting me to tell them, what do you think you're doing well? Where do you want to keep growing? All of this stuff. Like they want to hear it. That is a context where it is now culturally acceptable to brag. And you do it in the appropriate way and you wrap it around with to show them that you're realistic about your thinking. You can also tell them the areas you're continuing to work on to try and grow. But these are the areas that I've really delivered for the business. And potentially you're also saying, and these are the areas that I want to deliver on in the future. And you're sort of showing them that forward thinking and that confidence of the next place that you want to add more value to them and things like that. So yeah, for me, it's all about getting myself into the context of once I've built the context and that I can picture that, then I have that confidence to speak up and sell myself a bit.
Yeah, yeah. And you see, you've worked that out through experience and pushing yourself and playing with it a little bit. And I think that's really important. We have a free guide around how to do this. And if you're happy, we can put it in the
show notes
and people can pick it up. And it's got scripts in it and how-to pieces on how to self-advocate effectively at work, which people might find useful.
Yeah, awesome. Well, that's probably a good place to wrap up. How can people find you and get in touch and potentially work with you or follow along with your podcast?
Thank you, Alex. Yeah, so our podcast is called Your Brilliant Career. And one of the things that struck me, Alex, when I first looked at your website is we both advocate for owning your career. Like, no one is going to care more about your career than you. And I think we're both very aligned at that. Mm. And so the things that we want to impart are about helping people, how do you own that career more effectively? So anyway, our podcast is called Your Brilliant Career. We have guests and some of the pieces I do by myself. Like, I'll talk about things like how to get your salary, a pay increase, or how to showcase your strategic acumen, or how to get over perfection, all of those sort of things. The website, Your Brilliant Career, you can jump on there to see our Rise Accelerate program. You can jump on the wait list for that. That's our signature 90-day career program for women. And we will kick off in March next year. So you can get your name down for that. I'll put the free guide as well in there to have a look at. We have Instagram, Your Brilliant Career, and I'm Gillian Fox at LinkedIn.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for being on today and look forward to continuing to watch your journey.
Yeah, thank you, Alex. It's been an absolute pleasure. It was a really energizing conversation and an easy one too. So thank you for inviting me. I've enjoyed it a lot.
Well, thanks so much for joining me today. Be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And let's connect on LinkedIn so that we can keep the conversation going. Or head to my website and download my free resource, The Career Building Principles. Bye for now.